Hello, everybody. Welcome to Luxury News Weekly, your number one source for luxury news. Today, we are talking about Logan Paul losing $3.5 million on fake Pokemon cards. We're talking about a magic BMW that changes color right before your eyes, North Face and Gucci's collaboration, a Grand Seiko, which we think is the best men's watch for winter, and a Balmain and Barbie collaboration, and the unfortunate untimely death of the king of fashion. Welcome to Luxury News Weekly, your number one source for luxury news. I'm your host, Simba Wakatama.
And I'm your host, Elizabeth Solaru.
All right, so let's get into it. Let's start with Logan Paul. Now, Logan Paul last year bought $3.5 million worth of certified and sealed Pokemon cards. They were in a box within another box that was sealed and certified, so there was no real need to open it until he had to basically check if these were real or not, because there were some suspicions. Now, as you know, if you're a collector, when you open a box, you kind of devalue it, so you don't really want to do that. But he really had to this time. And when he did, of course, this was a public spectacle because he streamed it. When he did, they found out that a lot of these card boxes were looking very fishy. So they had to open one up, and there weren't even Pokemon cards in it. It was G.I. Joe. So out of, I think, about 12 Pokemon boxes, only five or so were authentic. And the rest were all fake. So about $2.4 million worth of fakes. And then the rest were real. So, wow, what a loss. What do you think about this, Elizabeth?
This story is so good and so interesting for many, many reasons. But let's go back a little bit, because way before the unboxing, a number of things had happened. So, for example, the fact that the box that Paul purchased doesn't actually resemble previous boxes for a similar set. Also, the original seller, they changed their story on how they acquired the valuable case at least three times in the past. Plus, the very first box was actually sold for $75,000, well below the auction price originally. So first time round, it was sold for $75,000, which is way, way below. So that really should have raised a number of red flags. And I think it really did, because why did he go get an authenticator a second time? So I suspect that he already knew that something was amiss, and he just decided to let it all play out and maybe to do what he did for clout. So, but I know you've got some theory around that. So let's hear it, Simba.
Well, yeah, actually something you mentioned, for clout. So let's get into this. My hot take is, could this be a scam? Could this be one big scam? Not that Logan Paul is being scammed, but we, the viewers, are being scammed. Because why? Theory number one, he's a YouTuber. And I just have a healthy distrust for YouTubers. Even if I'm a YouTuber, I would have a healthy distrust for YouTubers. Because at the end of the day, they're entertainers, first and foremost, even the educators. So this whole thing is streamed live. It's trending, number one trending topic. And Logan Paul is amazing at turning his failures into money makers, because everyone wants to see him lose. Everyone wants to see him fail, and he's monetizing that. So this to me seems like a really, really good way to monetize the loss of $3.5 million. It's a lot of money. It's a weird topic, and it's something everyone connects to Pokemon. So this whole thing could have been a setup. So that's number one. Number two, you know, well, he did get refunded, just to mention that. He got refunded, so it's all good. Didn't lose money. Number two, it's tax season. And, you know, art, as we know, is used for embezzling most of the time. Art and collectibles. I would not be surprised. This is more of a far-fetched take, but I would not be surprised if he purposefully lost money on this deal to save on taxes. Then he can get the refund later and then have to worry about that next year. But by next year, he's got another way to spend the 3.5. Right? So that's those are kind of the two most obvious ways I could see this being a complete scam. And of course, unfortunately, if it turns out that he had no idea about this and both the authenticators and the world-renowned card trader were both duped, which is like all three of them would have to be duped. He's a collector too, so everyone had to have made a mistake. Yeah, then, hey, such is life, I guess.
Yeah, I think, though, when you look at the balance of probabilities, What are the odds of all three of them being duped? What are the odds? I mean, this is what the authenticator does for a living. People who collect Pokemon, even on screen, when he was doing the unboxing, a number of people were expressing the fact that it did not look real. And to make matters worse, a lot of the cards were of G.I. Joe's. So again, I'm kind of like side eyeing all three of them at this point, actually. Obviously, there's no, we're not implying anything. We're just postulating and theorizing on what the possibilities might be. However, on balance, all three of them being fooled and doing an unboxing. Again, red flags.
Yeah, like this is their bread and butter. You think they would just get this stuff wrong on a whim? In the industry of card trading, you only have to be wrong once and your career is ruined. Once. They didn't have one authenticator. They had the entire baseball card exchange of Chicago, okay? The BBCE. It was multiple authenticators. Even in the video, there were like five of them in the room, you know? So it's, it's crazy. And the likelihood that every single person got it wrong, unlikely. I think it could have been a situation where the opportunity came up. It looked legit with some issues. Then Logan says, you know what? This is sketchy enough. Let's go through with it. If it turns out to be great, I win. If it turns out to be bad, I win. Right? There's no losing. So let's just go with this shady deal. It will make for a good story in the end anyways. And everyone will get paid. So don't worry about it.
I completely agree on the win-win situation. The only people who lose out are the viewers, because whether it's genuine or whether it's fake, it draws views. And like you said, he's a YouTuber. They live and die by the number of views. And to make things even better, the whole internet is talking about this. So again, win-win. But I think there ought to be something. And again, this raises issues around this kind of content skating the very, very edges of what's ethical, what's perhaps legal. We kind of need to examine that. I know that YouTube, they've got their frame of reference, they've got their do's and don'ts, they've got, you know, but this kind of thing, I don't know. It just leaves a sour taste in the mouth.
Exactly. It's too iffy to tell. It's a he said, she said situation. Truth is, we will never know. We might never, ever no, but here on Luxury News Weekly, we look at the angles and then we try to figure it out, right? So that's all we can do. We are interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit about the people behind Luxury News Weekly. I'm your host, Simbo Wakatama, the founder and CEO of Volo Bespoke. We personalize jewelry storage for the jewelry you wear. Find me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Simba Wagatama.
I'm Elizabeth Solaru, founder and CEO of Luxury Business Emporium and Elizabeth's Cake Emporium. You can find me on LinkedIn as Elizabeth Solaru or on Instagram as Luxury Business Emporium.
Now let's talk about this magic BMW, because this is wild. You know, you have to search this up. If you're listening, you have to search this up and watch the video, because pictures will not do it justice. Just talking about it will not do it justice. BMW released a concept for their 2022 iX, all right? And this car uses a technology called e-ink to change color on the fly. And I'm not saying the whole car just changes color. It has this kind of spectral change, right, from black to white. And you can see it kind of like how a squid or octopus changes color to move into its, adapt to its environment. And it looks kind of pixelated. That's how this car looks. And it is the wildest thing. Now, this e-ink essentially uses a ink that changes to the electric charge. So if you put a charge through it, then it'll put some ink to the top or some ink to the bottom, and that's the color that will show, if that makes sense. Right? That's the simplest way I could explain this. But yeah, quite something. What do you think?
Yeah, I found this really, really fascinating because, you know, as a former scientist, I wanted to obviously delve deeper into the kind of technology. But apparently, there is a specially developed body wrap around the car, and then you have the electrical signals. So this car, so the pigments in that body wrap then come to the surface once you apply a particular electrical signal. And for me, I'm looking at the possibilities. I'm thinking this is where you've got digital meeting reality. And I think this is the kind of car that certain influencers will absolutely love. Imagine being able to match your outfit to the color of your car without having to buy a new car. So I think the possibility is endless for this kind of technology, in terms of either for vanity or in terms of just, you know, generally showing off, reflecting that you probably have one of the coolest cars on the planet. So I say bravo to the developers of this technology. And it just makes me wonder, could this technology be applied to other things? So other, you know, could it be applied to houses? Could it be applied to some electrical goods that we have in the house? So if you wake up and you want your whole kitchen to be pink, voila, could it be, you know? So again, it just gives you possibilities. And I'm pretty sure in the future, this might actually happen.
Yeah. And, you know, my weird first instinct was this is like a robber's dream car. You go, you rob a bank in one car, you're in the same car, it's a different color. No one knows what they're looking for, right? It's that was a lot of what people were saying in the comments as well.
Oh, my goodness. I did not even think of that angle, but I can just imagine. But having said that, though, the make, you know, obviously the make of the car, you know, the brand of, you know, it, things will still remain the same. I know the color might change, but, you know, but I think that is actually a really, really interesting point. But like I said, I'm just thinking about how that same technology can be applied to other things. You know, can it be applied to clothes, for example? Because I wonder what that special wrap is that they're not saying. So obviously they would hold the patent for that. They would hold the trademark, et cetera, for that. So, and, you know, applying electrical current as well. So again, my brain's just going 10 miles per hour, 1,000 miles per hour, because I'm kind of thinking the possibilities of this technology to be applied is absolutely huge.
Yes, absolutely. Now, let's talk about this fashion collaboration, all right? We see Gucci doing a lot of collabs, And this is one they've done before, North Face. But I remember the last time they did a North Face collaboration, we weren't very impressed. It was kind of bland. So now they've gone ahead and done a new collaboration. I feel like that was more of like a test, like a feeler. Now they've done a new collaboration and the designs are popping. The imagery is much more of a spectacle. And they've even got some very funny influences involved in the campaign, which is amazing. So we'll talk about that. But off of just the clothing right now, what do you think?
Just looking at the clothing, I would say 1,000% better than what they did last time. I love the colors. I like that they pop. And it goes to show that one of the reasons that Gucci is still the number one luxury brand, although I use that word loosely, luxury, is because they actually listen to feedback and they go ahead and correct whatever it is that needs to be corrected. So yes, they did a test last time, but this time round, I absolutely like what I'm seeing. I love the colors. And also the accessories are quite great as well, because they created a line of accessories to go with this collaboration. So well done, Gucci. I kind of like it, although they still introduce a bit of their granny chic on some of the pieces. I'm noticing granny chic. But in general, are a lot better than last time.
You know what it reminds me of? If you go to any one of these wholesale stores that sells t-shirts, there's always that t-shirt with the wolf on it. There's always the one with the forest. And it's like you feel like a random person will be wearing that shirt, you know, to eat soup in bed. It's just, like you said, granny chic. But we all know what it looks like. It's kind of a ironic fashion, if that makes sense, because young people are the ones that are going to wear this, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Also, talking about, you know, the wolf on the wolf fleeces, etc. They were so popular on QVC. I remember about, gosh, I'm probably showing my age now, 20, 30 years ago on QVC. They were actually some of the best-selling items, believe it or not. You know?
Yeah, they're everywhere.
They were everywhere. So I love that Gucci can tongue-in-cheek reference those. Again, you know, they have the North Face logo all over it, but I love the way they've actually referenced that. And I love the fact that they've actually gone right into the middle of, you know, the mountainside, forest, etc., to literally do this shoot. So well done, Gucci.
And you know what's a kind of a special treat here? So if you watch the campaign video, which again, the imagery I think is amazing. Amazing. It really makes you feel the weather. And I think that's the point, right? Well, if you watch the video, there is someone there that most people won't recognize at first, but we've all seen him. On TikTok, there's a guy who was going viral, not just on TikTok and Instagram. And he's called the train guy. And he is basically the most enthusiastic train watcher in the world. He was literally crying on camera when he spotted one of his trains. And it was kind of its last go. It was his last journey. And what makes it so hilarious is the angle he uses. He uses a top-down angle, a wide lens, and it makes him look like an alien, but he's very serious. He's very serious about this passion. It's just hilarious. Oh, but he's in the campaign as the train conductor.
Wow. Now, you see, this is exactly, again, I say this over and over again, Gucci knows the pulse of Gen Zs and millennials. They cater to that market so well. And that's because it takes a bit of ingenuity to think through this incredible campaign. And it's those little details that make a difference. So imagine spotting a train spotter, right? Yeah. In a Gucci campaign.
Yeah.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
People will literally watch the campaign just to see him. And he's very, I don't know, he's got an innocence about him, a purity about him. His passion is pure. And now Gucci's, you know, saying, hey, come play this role. We'll pay you a handsome amount. And you can kind of spread your passion for trains. I think it's amazing.
Absolutely. Well done, Gucci. Bravo.
Bravo. Now, let's talk about watches for a second. It is freezing over here in Toronto. I'm talking minus 20 degrees. So you don't really go out much. But when you do, what do you wear? Now, if we're wearing a watch, this one is the one for winter. For men, for winter. If you can get your hands on it, I would recommend buy it. This is a Grand Seiko, okay? And it celebrates the first frost of winter. It is called the Soko Frost. And what it is a basically frost blue dial with a steel bracelet, stainless steel bracelet, and it's textured to look like snow. So it is very, very cool. It's in there. Let me not mispronounce this. Kirazuri ice blue color. It's kind of like a sky blue, an icy sky blue. And they say it's based on the frozen trunks of bamboo trees in Japan, in one of the Japanese forests, famous Japanese forests. And this will run you about $6,000 to $7,000 US dollars. And it features a spring drive with a power reserve, and there are different versions of it. But yeah, it is quite the watch.
At first glance, looking at the images, love, love, love the reference to ice. I love that they've actually captured the kind of blue that you see when a sea is frozen, you know, the Arctic, et cetera, et cetera. So like they said, you know, captures the blue of the Sea of Japan. I only have one problem. Why didn't they do a version for females? Why is there no female watch?
Or that's is it meant true. To be,
or is it meant to be a unisex watch? And if in that case, that's, you know, that would be a cool thing to sell. Because yes, I know the straps are dark, but I love the stitching. I love the pale blue stitching. And I think they've used two kinds of blue. You have a paler blue stitching, and one is a deeper blue stitching for both watch designs. And there are subtle differences in the faces of the watches. However, they could have done one for girls as well. So, and especially at that price point, it's not uber expensive. So that's the only negative that I have about this watch.
Yeah, it really is great value. And Grand Seiko basically built a name on having the most affordable, high-end, amazing quality watches. Like, to get that same quality, you'd have to pay twice as much, generally speaking. Yeah, but I don't think they even make women's watches at all. I don't think they make the watches small enough. But I could be wrong. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, again, this is a U.S. exclusive as well. So you can't buy this exact version or these exact versions anywhere else. Right. So you'd have to order it from the U.S. and then, of course, get it shipped to you, which is not a really big deal for most people. But yeah, you're right. But what's interesting about this watch had me thinking, you know, we all know how to tell time. But when's the last time you asked yourself how a watch tells time?
That's an interesting question. It just does, doesn't it?
Right. No one ever thinks of that. How does a watch tell time? How does it keep time? We just see it ticking, or if you, you know, you've got a mechanical watch, you don't see it tick, but, you know, you see it moving and you're like, oh, I rely on this thing to tell me the time, but it's losing time all the time. So I had to look into it. Then I realized, well, we don't actually understand what these movements do, how these watches work. So from now on, what I'm going to do is every time we talk about a watch, I'm going to introduce a new fun fact about how the watches actually work. How does that sound?
I think that's incredible because one of these things that we try to do on Luxury News Weekly is to not just inform, but we also add commentary and we also aim to educate as well. So I think that sounds fantastic because I definitely would like to know more.
Definitely. So mind you, this watch is a very special kind of movement, which is called spring drive. I'm not going to get into spring drive right now, but let's start at the basics very quickly. And then in the next couple episodes, I'll just, you know, keep adding to it, right? If that makes sense. So we kind of got a mini series in here.
Exactly. And that just kind of, you know, I love how these things just kind of develop because for a number of people who are not into watches, as I wasn't when I started Luxury News Weekly, when we both started, but bit by bit, I'm beginning to recognize and identify with certain descriptions and phrases that I never in a million years would have known, even certain names in the watch industry. So I think that education is absolutely invaluable. So thank you very much for that.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. I'll do a basic explanation of one of the more famous movements in the luxury watch world so that at least now you can have a conversation with your boss about this. We're going to talk about the mechanical movement. So what does a mechanical watch even mean to say I got a mechanical watch? Well, there's kind of two streams of it. You've got on the mechanical, you've got the self-winding watches and you've got the automatic watches, which they wind. You don't have to wind it. Or you might have to wind it at the very beginning and then it winds itself through kinetic energy. Just you moving your wrist basically winds this watch. So how the watch keeps time? Those watches do not have any batteries in them. They have no electricity running through them. All the energy is powered by a spring. It's called the main spring. So this spring is basically coiled up tight and it slowly releases itself. It uncoils. And its uncoiling is controlled. It's in a controlled manner, and that powers the watch. So you'll notice in mechanical watches, like they say, my Rolex don't tick-tock, okay? Rolexes, they don't go tick, tick, tick every second. And no mechanical watch, yes, no mechanical watch ticks. So if someone says, oh, I got this Rolex, and you start seeing it ticking every second, it's fake.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So how it works instead is while that spring is uncoiling, it's being controlled by what's called an escapement. And the escapement, you can usually see it from the back of the watch. It just allows the uncoiling to be on a repeated, predictable period, like a beat. So the hand will still kind of tick, but it's more of a sweeping motion than it is a tick every second motion, right? And that's because it's slowly uncoiling, slowly, 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 slowly over time. And then, of course, if you know the exact beat at which it's uncoiling and then moving the hands, that's how it's keeping time.
Interesting. Thank you very much for that. So, yeah. I think from now on, like you said, every week, a tiny tidbit, and then we'll keep adding to our library of information until we become amazing watch experts like yourself.
Now, I wouldn't call myself a watch expert, but I know how it works, at least. I know how it works. But yes. All right. So there's a little tidbit for this week. That was a very basic explanation. We'll go into it next time. Now, let's talk about this Balmain and Barbie collab. Is it fab or is it drab? That is the question. And there's NFTs involved. Elizabeth, would you like to take this on?
Yeah. I think off the top of my head and from what I can see, I think it's potentially a fab collaboration. As you know, I've created an NFT myself. So anything to do with NFTs, I'm very interested in. Also, a number of luxury brands are diving into the NFT world, they're diving into the metaverse because, again, this might sound cynical, there are no physical products. And you can even recreate designs from many seasons ago as NFTs. So you don't have to keep coming up with new designs. You can literally repurpose your previous designs, and there are no physical products, and you can make money. So for that reason alone, a lot of luxury brands are now diving into the NFT world. But what makes this collaboration very interesting to me is not just the NFTs, not just the fact that it's Balmain dressing Barbies in their amazing creations. I love the diversity aspect of it. So they're going to be creating 3 different types of Kens, and they will be creating quite a number of Barbies as well. And some of those Barbies will have afros, will have blonde hair, red hair, etc., etc. There's going to be a massive, massive digital campaign that will accompany the launch. According to what we hear, each NFT will come with brand-inspired items of a similar size, and it will kickstart new chapters in both the fashion and toy industry. So for me, Balmain collaborating with Barbie is brilliant, but the fact that they're even thinking about diversity, body diversity, size diversity, color diversity, especially when it comes to Barbies, I think that's absolutely incredible. And I think it's definitely going to be collectibles as well.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this a very good collaboration, especially when it comes to the cross between NFTs and Barbies, because it's a Barbie's already a collectible, and now you've got a digital collectible, which is more relevant now. It's, you know, what people are talking about with the physical product, because I think we all agree we like NFTs with physical products too attached to them, experiences attached to them. And, you know, this is perfect. Now, there's also the ready-to-wear angle, which I think looks great. I think the collection looks great. And there's a lot of people who feel that strong connection to Barbie, strong Barbie fashion connection, right? Like you say, oh, that person's such a Barbie when they're dressed, when they dress to the nines in pink. So I think it has all the markings of a great collaboration. And of course, Oliver, he has his own Ken doll that looks exactly like him, and it's draped in his kind of style too. So that's cool.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. And also remember that the last NFT drop that we absolutely adored was the one by Dolce and Gabbana, and they got it right. They attached an NFT to physical products as well as experiences. And I think that Balmain and Barbie probably saw that and they thought, actually, this is something we can do because they both have physical products and they can both take their brands, their phenomenal brands, into the metaverse. So I think if this collection is absolutely successful, this could be something they roll out. You know, anniversaries is an opportunity, celebrating one thing or another, that's another opportunity. I love the fact that with this particular collaboration, even accessories were not left out. You've got the tiaras, adorned. Instead of Barbie, it's got Balmain Paris. You've got the handbags. So I think this potentially could be an incredible, incredible collaboration.
Yeah, I have to agree. And of course, the Ken, if you remember the Ken collaboration with Berluti, that was before, but it was only the Kens. There were no Barbies there, but they made the miniature leather jackets and goods, and then they sold the real size version as well. And it looked amazing, of course, because Berluti is not as popular in North America, but they just make exquisite fashions, exquisite leathers. I think Barbie is going to keep doing this with more and more brands. Just let Balenciaga catch wind of this, and sure enough, there'll be some weird take on this.
They will be all over it like a rash, because they just do it again. That's the thing about Balenciaga. They either do things really, really well or really, really badly. So, but I'm happy that Barbie are doing this with Balmain first. We don't know if Balmain has an exclusive. I don't think they probably will, because Barbie can go anywhere. So, yeah, I can't wait to see what Balenciaga tries to do to top this.
Honestly, I can wait.
Oh, they're your favorite brand.
Yeah, yeah. I love to hate them. Yeah. Honestly, if they aren't putting out all this crazy stuff, I don't know what I'd talk about, you know?
Exactly. So.
Now, a bit of a somber story. We have the untimely death of the king of fashion, André Talley. And he passed away at the age of 73 from what seems to be a heart attack. And for those who don't know, he was actually the former editor of Vogue. And as a black man in fashion back in the day, that was quite the feat in the world of not just fashion, but luxury and culture, right? Because Vogue, that was the heyday of Vogue. They controlled the narrative around fashion and culture for the entire world. What they said was going to work, worked. And what they said won't work, couldn't. So they created fashion icons. It's, you know, they're that company. Nowadays, you know, so. But yeah, he was behind that. So yeah.
Yeah. I have plenty to say about this, actually. And some of it I probably won't say here. But he was an incredible, incredible man in terms of fashion. He was wearing capes way before they were fashionable. He just had an eye. Now, there are so many creative directors out there, especially those that work in fashion, but he had an incredible eye. And he actually discovered and encouraged a number of really talented individuals. So, for example, he literally got John Galliano off the couch. He was very instrumental to developing the career of Marc Jacobs. And he obviously discovered so many models, et cetera, et cetera. But there's one thing that I feel should be addressed. This man did not get his flowers when he was alive. I know that, for example, he lost his New York apartment and he barely held on to his house that he was renting in White Plains. And there was, you know, we can't mention him without talking about Anna Wintour. Anna Wintour, incredible, incredible, legendary editor. Again, incredible eye. But I don't think she would have been half as successful as she was without André Léon Talley by her side. He was incredibly loyal to her. She, on the other hand, again, I wasn't there. I don't know. These are just things you read about. She, on the other hand, cut him out. So, for example, he used to do the red carpet interviews for the Met Gala. And he knew his fashion. He knew who inspired what look. You know, a lot of people loved him. 2018, she just drops him abruptly and brings in a YouTuber. Same thing when Vogue decided they wanted a podcast. He hosted the podcast and he did extremely well. The numbers were great. It was fantastic listening. A lot of celebrities went on the podcast. And again, the podcast was just cut. And for that podcast, I was absolutely shocked to hear he was only paid $500 per podcast. Now, wow. The town car, I know, right? The town car that took him from his house in White Plains to New York, it cost way more than the $500, but he loved Vogue. Vogue was his life. Again, I believe that he probably didn't. He didn't. Again, I say this when I was a headhunter, I used to say this. You don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate. I think he probably realized too late that the people that he adored, that he surrounded himself with, the people that he wants, you know, because there's this mystique and air around working in Vogue, you know. So all those people were not really his friends. And unfortunately, it was way too late for him. So he just said, you know, because I read his book, The Chiffon Trenches, and some of it was quite sad and some of it was really, really heartbreaking. And some of it just read like him, just name dropping. For me, it's a shame that somebody who was an encyclopedia of insane fashion knowledge is dead. And yeah, to me, it's such a shame because I wish somebody could have gone into his head and recorded everything that he knew about fashion. André Léon Talley, you never got your flowers. Rest in peace. I was a huge fan. There's a lot more I can say, but I think I'm just going to stop at this point.
And, you know, it's true. I mean, like most great people, you appreciate them when they're gone, right? The very same people that caused these problems are going to be speaking at his funeral, telling everyone how amazing he was and how we didn't know what we had. And that's kind of the unfortunate truth in these cutthroat industries. Everyone's after you. Everyone wants your neck. And you're absolutely right. You get what you negotiate. And unfortunately, I think I don't know nearly as much about André, but I'll say this. I feel like sometimes you don't expect to gain that kind of success, prestige, position. And so you're blinded to to what's best for you at that status, if that makes sense. You're just so happy to be there that that your guard kind of is let down. And then that's when you get into these kinds of situations. And I'm sure, like, this is not the first time we've heard of Vogue kind of having issues with their employees, or employers, not paying people or what have you. They had a ton of walkouts, right? Protests.
Yes.
That's not for no reason. Yeah. The company only collapsed on the outside because it was already collapsing from the inside, right? So this is no surprise. But you can't tell me he didn't see it happening, right? But that, you know, but I'm sure he
exactly.
was just exactly. So that's all I'm really saying. Because
you've actually hit the nail on the head with blind spots. We all have our blind spots. And I think he had a blind spot towards, because when you're in a situation like that, anyone who isn't your level, you don't really notice, you don't really take notice of. So his world was all these incredible designers, these incredible, he sat front row at fashion shows. He previewed collections. He had this immense power. However, you're absolutely right, because when you are finally invited to sit at the table, sometimes you don't notice how the wait staff are being treated. You don't notice that maybe even they're not even giving you the full set of cutlery to eat your dinner with. You're just so grateful to be there. But the one thing I'm going to do is I want to end on a kind of like positive note and say, shout out to the people who discovered him. So shout out to people like Diana Vreeland, who actually noticed him in the 60s. And again, the story is incredible of how that happened. Shout out to people like Julia Child. Shout out to people like his grandmother, who actually encouraged him to read and write and encouraged his talent and gave him the confidence to thrive. And I will also going to shout out Anna Wintour, because Anna was the one who appointed him to creative director. Yes, I know they fell out. Yes, I know they had their differences, but at least she gave him that opportunity. And I'm just going to shout out to Andre, who showed that a black 6'6" man from North Carolina can reach the highest heights of fashion based on ability, an incredible eye, and an incredible ability to spot talent.
I second all of that for sure. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. And you've listened this far, you might as well give us a good review. Much appreciated. Also, check us out on our social channels. The links will be in the show notes. So, thank you again. See you next week.